And we are here, Chris Grant, Scott German, JPJ. Your final score, Virginia 57, Louisville 54. Seventh win by 3 points or less for this Virginia team. Not this season, not this decade, since February 11th. Yet again, Scott, we have a tight one. I'm going to get you framed in here a little bit better. And Kihei Clark comes up big, 18 points, 5 assists. He hits the 3 with 28 seconds to go. Mamani Diakite in his last game in JPJ, 17 points, 8 rebounds. And Virginia, once again, they test our hearts, but they get the win.
They find a way to win. Sometimes they pull victory, defeat from the jaws of victory, or is it victory from the jaws of defeat? But, you know, Louis, we... Another three-pointer. We needed a desperation three by Louisville in the last second to
make it a three-point
to
game.
To narrow it from a 6-3. So I guess it does go down as a – it counts.
It counts. And this game felt – I mean, it was effectively that kind of a game. Virginia led 57-51 after a pair of free throws by Mamani Diakite with 3.8 seconds left. But, wow, it was 43-29, 13-20 to go after a Thomas Golder Tensai three, his only three of the game. 14-point lead. It was still 12. Braxton Key hit a little bunny about 10-16 to go. It was 47-35. And then, on Virginia's side, the lid tightened up on the rim. Virginia only made one basket the next 5-plus minutes. And Louisville, on the other hand, if you remember the game NBA Jam from back in the 90s, they were on fire. 6 of their next 7 from the floor, 4 of them threes. And the fourth one tied the game up at 51. And Scott, honestly, it felt like, I mean, when they're playing that way and Virginia's playing offense the way it does, in stretches like that, it felt like it was slipping away.
It felt like what it felt like at Miami, what it felt like at Tech, that the clock was about to strike midnight on us, on our run of luck, if you want to use that. Our run of being able to escape with one or two-point wins. But, good teams find ways to win, and good teams find ways to not lose. And I think tonight was a combination of both.
I was looking at my stat sheet. To see, it was a Darius Perry three that tied it up at 51, just over 5 minutes to go. And Louisville didn't make another basket until there were 0.3 seconds left down 6. So Virginia gets the stops down the stretch. Not necessarily great offense. In fact, Virginia only made one shot itself. Isn't that appropriate? From the field, at least. A Mamani Diakite free throw. He was 1 of 2. Made the front end of a 1-1. I think that was the case. Front end of a 1-1. About a minute, 48 to go. Mm-hmm. Put Virginia up 52-51. A couple of more stops. And then K.A. Clark gets the ball after the second stop in that sequence. Comes up the court, runs a little action with Diakite, a little high screen action, pick and roll if you want to call it, and got around the side. Now, I'm looking exactly right now over our screen here towards where he was. Scott, you saw it all the way. I thought it was going to go off to the right and bound out, but nothing but the bottom. And that gave Virginia a 4-point lead, a couple more stops. And Diakite hits those two free throws. But, they were 6 of 7 in a stretch, about a 5-minute stretch of the second half. 4 of those threes. They cut a 14. They actually tied the game from a 14-point deficit, does Louisville when I say that. And then again, Virginia clamps down and keeps them off the scoreboard for almost the entire last 5-12 after that Perry three. So, we say this a lot about 20-minute teams. When it's a tight game, you want your best unit to have the game in its hands. Your best unit is the defense, and once again, the defense comes up big.
Yeah, Louisville made a three-pointer to tie it at the 5-12 mark and then didn't score again until the desperation three at the end, right?
It was the three from Williams and Samuel Williamson. That gave us our 3-point final score. But pull up the shooting stats. I didn't count how many shots in a row they missed in that stretch. After the Perry three, you click on it up here. Sorry, some inside journalism and things like that. After the Perry three, which was at the 5-12 mark of the second half, they were 18 of 43. They missed their next 7. missed her next seven shots in those next 5 minutes plus. So, again, I will say it again, Scott. If you're a Virginia fan, if you're Tony Bennett, if a game is close at the end, you want your best unit to have the game in its hands. It's the defense that's going to win games for you. That's what happened here today.
Right. And a team, and that lineup that was on the floor at the end of the game is a veteran, poised lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah, that shot looked good for me the moment it left his hands.
PA shot, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, looking back on the season, and we're almost, to me, there's almost like we're just ho-humming this thing along. I mean, 22 of our 30 opponents this year, we held under 60 points. Beat a Louisville team tonight, beat a good Duke team last week. Those two teams both spent a lot of this season in the top three or four teams.
Yeah.
I mean, this was
two of them were ranked number one this year.
Right. Two of them were ranked at one time number one in the nation.
Yeah.
And there's no hotter team in the ACC right now than Virginia.
Well, and when you look at the totality of the games against those three teams, Virginia splits with Louisville. They win here by three, lose there by seven in a game that Virginia led with 3 minutes to go. Only one game this year against Duke, you win that game. And you split with Florida State. You lost by four there. You won by five here. I don't care what Net says or Ken Pom says or ESPN says. Joe Lunardi can suck something. Virginia is a pretty damn good basketball team. And I'll say he can suck a lemon, to be very friendly there about that. But look at that. That's three top 10 teams. And the biggest result was a 7-point loss for Virginia. 3-2 record against those teams. I don't want to hear any more crap about this Virginia team being lucky or being overrated or anything like that. This is a team that wins basketball games.
Yeah, and luck is often how well you play to put yourself in this. Some teams don't play well enough to even take advantage of getting luck.
This is a question from Elizabeth German. I assume there's a relation there. Former AFP intern as well, from way back in the day. She asked, how many more stopping close calls must we endure?
How many more games are there?
So I mentioned seven wins since February 11th by 3 points or less. 10-1 record now for Virginia in such games this season. I ran the numbers the other night after the most recent before tonight 3 points or less win. In Tony Bennett's first 10 years here, Virginia had a combined 18 wins by 3 points or less. 10 this year. Only one last year. Well, 1-1 record. Only played two games like this last year.
We usually mop the floor up with teams.
The last couple of years, when you go 66-6 with three NBA players, yeah, that's what's happened.
So let's we just reeled off those amazing stats that we've been able to accomplish this year. Let's call a spade a spade. And this is the worst offensive team Coach Bennett has had in his career. Would you not agree with that?
I'll keep talking. I'll pull some stats out for you. Keep talking.
From an offensive efficiency standpoint, by far, this is Tony's least, to be charitable, least effective team. We've got one true offensive scorer, one true ball handler. And we're playing in a league that night after night we're going up against teams that have four and five star players up and down the bench. And we're just continuing to win. So if this effort by Coach Bennett this year does not earn him Coach of the Year honors, and it likely will not, because Leonard Hamilton is Florida State's winning handily as we speak right now against Boston College. They're going to finish in first place. They're going to finish with a regular season title. I would not be surprised if he wins.
I would be surprised.
You think?
Oh, I'd be very surprised. So you had the first point about the least efficient team. This year's team is 236th in the country in offensive efficiency according to KenPom.com, and scoring less than a point per possession. Tony's previous worst team was 87th in the country, scored 1.08 points per possession. And just for reference, I actually ran this number once, so I remember it pretty well. The worst team of the KenPom era, which dates back to 2002, of any Virginia team, was the team that got Dave Leto fired. Now, that's a good, I mean, that's, there's a reason Tony Bennett's here, it's because Dave Leto's last team sucked and got him fired. And they scored 1.035 points per possession, 151st in the country. This team is not even close to the offensive efficiency of that team that got Dave Leto fired. This team is 15-5 in the ACC, 23-7 overall. That team was 10-18 overall and 4-12 in the ACC. So the way the team that's by far like a head or two above worst offensively wins games is grit and defense and want to.
So for those that are watching that aren't as analytically inclined as some others, those stats that you just gave out pretty much says that we suck offensively.
Suck is the right word for it. 236 in the country. There are 353 teams. So you're in the bottom third of the country offensively.
Throwing a beach ball in the ocean if you're standing in the ocean. So for Tony to be able to win 23 games
with this team,
yeah, with this offensively challenged team.
Let me give you a sense of
just an absolute phenomenal.
Let me give you a sense of what the other stats. Teams who are around us offensively are.
It's Ooey probably Pooey. Directional teams.
Ooey Pooey, Indiana University, Purdue University, Indiana is 237 at 7-25. Western Michigan's a couple spots ahead of us, 13-18. Florida Atlantic, Weber State, LaSalle, Nicholls State, Binghamton. Binghamton's way ahead of us. Tony Kornheiser's alma mater. Abilene Christian, UT Rio Grande Valley. I didn't even know they were a Division I school. Monmouth, Army, UNC Asheville, Samford, who just lost to VMI in the SoCon tournament. That's what you're talking about in terms of the teams who are around us offensive efficiency-wise this year. None of those teams are 15-5 in the ACC. Most of those teams don't have 15 wins in their small conferences for their whole season. So it's a remarkable coaching job by a coach to get this team to play the level of defense it needs to play. And also, okay, so it's one thing to say play defense, but, you know, at the end of games, whether you're playing great defense for 38 minutes or not, for the last 2 minutes, if it's a two-point game with Louisville, two-point game with Duke, two-point game with Florida State, they still have better talent on the floor. And so, you know, you still got to figure out a way to get your guys to play better than coaches who have better players than you've got, no matter how good of a defense you've been playing all game. And that's where Tony and his staff, Brad Soderberg, just walked by us here about a minute ago. As they're clearing out of here. Tony, the staff, the players, credit them all for an amazing job to squeeze as much out of this team as they possibly can.
Night after night after night. Yeah. Home, away, neutral. They've just brought that level of intensity. And, you know, going back to a long ways for me, not as much as for you, the days of playing in the gym. You know, playing defense is not really that much fun.
No, it's not.
You go to the gym to score and make baskets.
That's right.
That's the only way this team wins.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not winning games.
They're not
on the offensive
people.
End
yeah.
of the floor. And to be able to maintain that high level of defensive intensity, not night in and night out, but possession. They don't take one possession off. If they do, they end up on the bench.
Since we got back from the, it just occurred to me, since we got back from the ACC championship football game, the next day we had to come up 29 from Charlotte and head here, and Virginia beat Carolina in another, the first of many rock fights that we saw here this year. But you think about that, since the ACC football championship game, December 7th, so this is March 7th, so that's a good, that's what, that's January, February, March, 3 months, 3 months exactly. Think about how many games have been comfortable. Two, the Virginia Tech win here, 65-39, the Boston College win here, 78-65, or 78-63 I think it was. That's two since December 7th. I want to get a quick one here of how many games we've played since then. Since December 7th, our record on December 7th after that win was 8-1. That's 15-6. We played 21 games, two of them. Because even the losses,
we're close.
The only loss this year was Purdue. You know, that was anything significant, and that was before that stretch. So 15-6, 21 games, only two of them where we could breathe. So no doubt that's why Elizabeth popped on here to ask about heart-stopping close calls, because Scott, I think she's worried about you.
And she has good reason.
And also, to follow up, I haven't seen her comment yet, but I think I hear her typing. She's wondering if you've got your will made out.
I've made it out and tore it up a couple of times.
Okay. Oh, tore it up a couple of times. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you were going to leave your money to some people here. And,
right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, okay.
But you know, on a more serious note, if you're a team in the NCAA tournament, regardless of where we've seated, and we know now we're going to be seated probably in the top five or six, how awful would it be to have to face Virginia in the first round?
First round or second round? I mean, whatever round, because, yeah, if we're going to be, a 4, 5, or 6, you're playing a 13, 12, or 11. But if you assume a Virginia win, it's probably going to be about 1 or 2 points in that game. There'll be a lot of people betting against us, certainly, with that.
What I'm saying is that we watch Louisville, and Louisville, the teams in this league know us.
Yeah, yeah.
We've played Louisville twice. Their coach, Mac, has seen us four times. The teams know us. But we watch Louisville run offense and make plays that just fall right into the pack line strategy, trying to pass the ball from side court to the other side court, trying to pass the ball in the middle.
And they know better than to do that.
They should know better than doing it. They know the beast they're about to play. What about these teams that draw Virginia that have never
attacked
this pack line?
What I was getting ready to say is that first team you play is going to be a mid-major good team or something like that. Assume a Virginia win, just for a second, for the sake of argument here. Second game, either Saturday or Sunday, that first weekend, you're playing another 4 or a 5 seed, right? They're probably a major conference team, and they've had one day to prepare for you, and probably not even. And they're not going to do a walkthrough, so all they got, and because everybody's spending so much time that week, Selection Sunday, and either Thursday or Friday, you spend so much time that week when your first opponent, you can't worry about a second opponent. You got to worry about your first opponent. There's no second opponent if you lose, and so. But when you win your first game, then you've got 24 hours to get ready for Virginia.
Yeah.
And you've never played anybody like Virginia. So, no, that second team is the one you really feel sorry for. Yeah. The first team's got a couple days to get ready for. That second team's got nothing to get ready for.
And we, as I said, we watched a very good Louisville team, a team that for most of the season was top five in the nation.
Yeah.
Just get frustrated. Make silly passes that will not work against the pack line. Take shots.
Really bad shots.
Random, just threw up shots with plenty of time left in the shot clock. And they did that because they were like, this is probably the best shot we're going to get.
Honestly, a lot of some of those makes in that 6 of 7 stretch were just shots that went in. They were the same kind of shots that just happened to go in.
Yeah.
They weren't good basketball shots.
And those
shots
are probably shots that Coach Bennett's going to look at on film and say, that's what we want them to take.
Yeah. Sometimes slop goes in, and they hit a couple of slop shots, but... This team's a tough out, and that's going to be the case. So let's go ahead and talk. We'll preview a little bit the ACC tournament, just the fact that we're going to be there covering. They handed us our credentials. I almost left them behind. Crystal Graham doesn't want to hear that.
Had you done that, they would have probably been sold on eBay by now.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Ratcliffe fortunately picked him up and said he jokingly said he was thinking about it, and he would have made a lot of money. But we're going to be there Tuesday night all the way through, and Virginia plays now Thursday night. Scott, did you say you knew the matchup? Potential matchup?
Potential, what I've just read, the winner of the Notre Dame-Boston College game.
I don't know what seed that puts us in. We haven't been able to look at that yet. We were still recapping our post-game coverage here, but we know Thursday night. So you're playing somebody that you're saying it's we're not getting a team that could have played 2 days then, so we're probably the 3 seed if that's the case. Somehow we fell behind because we beat Louisville here. There's a third tiebreaker anyway. We don't know.
But we will about 9 o'clock tonight.
Oh yeah, yeah. After the other game being played right now. And Jeff Fife's in fact saying second seed in the ACC. So maybe Jeff knows, and that would be the case. That'd be a late night. That's the last game of the night. No, I'm sorry. That's the 7 o'clock game. If we are the 2 seed.
Which is good.
Yeah, that's good. That means, Scott, we'll have watched 8 games already of the tournament by the time by the time Virginia tips off. But we'll play somebody who's had to play the day before in a similar situation. They don't get a lot of time to prepare. They have seen us this year, but it's still tough. And you've already played a day. That's the advantage of getting the double bye. You've already played a day. Your legs are tired, and then you've got to play a team that tires you out even if you come in fresh.
Right.
That makes it tough on you.
Right. I wrote an article last weekend saying this coming tournament was going to be like a WWE cage match.
Yeah.
Because there's four teams that are locked. And then maybe one or two that are playing for postseason play. Do you think it might be three? I'm thinking one. Maybe one.
I'm thinking one.
So every game,
NC State would be that team,
is potentially a team's last game. So
Wednesday should be interesting.
It may be ugly basketball. There might be a lot of blood on the floor, but it's going to be fun.
Wednesday's interesting because there's eight teams playing that day. All eight have to assume, even NC State has to assume, we have to play Saturday night and win to be able to go to the NCAA tournament. Because if NC State even wins a couple games and loses on Friday night, for example, they lose in the semifinals, I'm still not feeling good if I'm NC State. They're probably going to get in at that stage, but I still wouldn't feel 100%. So on Wednesday, there are going to be eight teams who think, hey, maybe lightning strikes. Maybe we catch lightning in a bottle, whatever the cliche you want to use, and we can win four straight. So Wednesday's going to be knockdown dragout. Like Scott said, probably not pretty, but it's going to be intense basketball. Thursday, the four top seeds are thinking about seeding. You know, there's some thought there. Duke, for whatever reason, Duke, honestly, except for strength of schedule, Virginia's got more Q1 wins, more Q1 and Q2 combined wins. And if Duke's a two seed, how's Virginia not in that realm? But they're playing for seeding, certainly. Louisville's got to be thinking. Louisville's now 3-4 in their last seven games. They got to be worried about falling down another seed line if they lose their first game in Greensboro on Thursday. Florida State's playing pretty well, but they've got to keep that going. They're probably a two seed.
They've shown that they're capable of not playing well.
They have, and so if you're Florida State, you don't want to go down and lose your first game on Thursday. So those four teams are all playing whoever wins on Wednesday. Teams who are fighting for their lives. So Wednesday and Thursday both should be interesting. Again, maybe not the prettiest basketball like we saw last year in Charlotte, like we were able to see last year in the NCAA tournament, but it should be intense basketball. So it should be a lot of fun. Thanks to Bear Creek, they'll be our sponsor again this year as we head down to Greensboro. And
that's, to me, that's the best thing about the upcoming ACC tournament.
You don't know who's going to win.
Well, you don't know who's going to win, but the fact that it's in Greensboro College,
the epicenter
of college basketball, in my opinion.
Well, it
certainly
is for
the ACC.
It is for those of us who grew up watching the ACC. I know Jeff Fipes joined us here on the Facebook Live component of this podcast. Scott, you did the same thing. I remember being in school. And the teachers would bring in, back when we were young, they had the TVs on those rolly tray kind of things. And at 12 o'clock on Friday, because that's when the tournament started back then with only eight teams in the league, your favorite teachers would bring the TVs in. You'd kind of watch what you were supposed to be doing in school, but you were really watching the games. There was one year that Virginia was a top seed, and they played at 12 o'clock on the Friday, and I had to... the school
you
spelling.
Went to school and you were in the ACC tournament?
Well, the one year I had to go, it was a school spelling bee was that day. Whoever put the school spelling bee schedule together put it on the Friday of the ACC tournament starting. So every other year I had ACC tournament influenza, but in seventh grade I had to win the spelling bee again. And my teacher came up to me, "It's a good day for you, Chris. You won the spelling bee and UVA won its game against Georgia Tech." So, but those were the days. And so, yeah, I never forget that when we're getting to sit courtside at the ACC tournament in Greensboro. It is, every time I do it, it's like the first time.
It's just magical, in my opinion. It's just the... one of the best sporting events I've ever been to. And who can forget our last trip to the ACC tournament in Greensboro? Win over Duke in the championship game. That was we turned Greensboro Coliseum into JPJ South.
Yeah.
And that was against Duke.
That was when the tournament was...
75% crowd was UVA
because Duke is also known as the College of New Jersey at Durham.
Right.
If it was Carolina, it would have been 95% blue, Carolina blue. But folks came down 29, including Scott and my wife. I remember that was one of the final was on a Sunday afternoon still,
right.
And. That was a great environment, and so we can hope for some return magic there. I've been very fortunate in my life twice in the last 6 years, seeing Virginia win ACC tournament championships in 2014 in Greensboro and then 2018 in Brooklyn. We'll hope that some magic maybe happens again. I don't know if we can ask for any more magic, though, Scott, and I'm not sure if we can withstand it if it does happen after the way the last several weeks have gone.
What's been your line this year from the airplane movie? You picked a bad week to stop sniffing glue.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Picked a bad week to stop sniffing glue. I gave up way too much for Lent. I'm not really Catholic, but we will be stocked with the appropriate beverages for post game next week in the hotel there, and looking forward to what should be again. It should just be a fun week with a lot of uncertainty as we head down to Greensboro. All right, well, let's go ahead and sign off. We got some work to do still. This is the fun part. Now we got to get to work. For Scott German, Chris Graham, signing off. Wahoo, wah.